Let's go, let's go, let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle. I want to go odd. 5-51 mirror.
This is Patriots Playbook.
Go stack guts combat. Odd. 51 mirror.
Patriots Playbook. Breaking down last Sunday's game.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They didn't have anybody to throw to. Just stay outside on the 7 route.
Next Sunday's game.
Be ready for the grapes check, too, okay? Because we'll get the bunch on 3rd and short. Even 51 grapes. Even 51 grapes.
And the rest of the
2007
NFL
yeah,
season.
Yeah, go ahead and hit it in there because the backers are going to fast read over the top.
And some of the fun stuff in between. Now, here's John Rook on Patriots Playbook.
Come on, let's go, let's go.
Once again, we welcome you inside Patriots Playbook on Patriots.com radio. I am John Rook, and it is great to be back with you as the Patriots now have an opponent to look forward to. Coming up this Saturday night is the Jacksonville Jaguars will come into Foxborough and play the Patriots in the AFC divisional round of the playoffs Saturday night, 8 o'clock Eastern time. Our schedule this week is obviously a little bit different simply because of the shorter work week with the Saturday game as opposed to a Sunday game. So that means we back everything up, and we've already lost some time this week just because of my absence on Tuesday with college basketball duties. So we're basically taking Thursday's program and moving it to today. Tomorrow will be Patriots Friday program. Mike Felger from ESPN 890 in Boston will be primarily occupying this slot, although I'll be around for a little while in this time slot tomorrow, but it's only because we've just kind of moved things around because the NFL decided the Patriots were best served in prime time on Saturday night. That is, of course, that's why they can gain the kind of revenue they do on television. So because this is technically a Thursday inside the playbook, that means on Thursdays, we get to visit with our good friend Russell Baxter. So, Russell from ESPN, NFL Research Coordinator, joins us here inside the playbook. Great to hear from you again. Sorry about the little schedule change, Russell, but I'm glad you're with us.
Listen, who can better call an audible than a radio show?
That's what radio is all about, man.
Right. I mean, no one is more suited. Okay? So, yeah. I'm adjustable.
Well,
I've gone through
many
a football season, my 19th football season with ESPN, as a matter of fact.
Really?
So this
that's great.
Is, you know,
that's awesome. 19 years. Unbelievable.
19th football season with ESPN.
Wow.
Wow.
Does this one stand out in any particular way, I guess, other than the Patriots going 16-0?
Well, everyone's uniquely different. And it's the thing I love about pro football is it is a five-month soap opera that actually gets an ending every year. Although the off season now gets a little more interesting than it used to, you know, pre-free agency days. But you know, this year we had a soap opera which had the highest scoring team in NFL history. A little controversy beginning of the year. Too much coverage about a quarterback and whatever he does in his personal life, and a slew of other surprises and touching stories as well, like the Redskins last week. I know who lost, but what a playoff surge for them as the mm-hmm. loss of their comrade. There's nothing like it. I mean, I know college football has its own drama and mystique and so on, but the NFL just gets bigger and better every year.
Well, you are definitely right about that. Let's remind the listeners that if they have some comments or some questions, perhaps at this point in time, the email inbox is open. Webradio@patriots.com. Webradio@patriots.com. That's how you reach us here on the program. We'll deal with some Jaguars issues coming up the second hour of the program. We'll also hear from some of the Patriots players a little bit later on in today's show. But, Russell, I'd be remiss, number one, if I didn't get your at least initial opinions on, yet again, someone inserting foot in mouth with Paul Spicer going off of the Jaguars. And I'm beginning to wonder now, will anybody ever learn?
Well, we'll find out if they learn on Saturday night. And, That turns out to be the test. And, you know, the thing is now is when you say something now, if you said it 4 months ago, 4 years ago, or even 40 years ago.
Still going to come back and get you.
Somewhere out there. I'll tell you a really funny story that has nothing to do with what we're talking about.
Okay.
We are in the conference room, and I know a lot of people don't have this opportunity, but sitting in the ESPN conference room on a Sunday afternoon or a Saturday afternoon during the playoffs, there's nothing like it. Watching the football games with the guys, which I've had the great privilege of doing for a long, long time,
mm-hmm.
It is funny, it is educational, it is irreplaceable. And when I write my memoirs about ESPN and my career and so on, 80% of it will be about that room, which has provided lots of yucks. But to show you that everything's out there, we got into a discussion about the greatest TV theme songs of all time.
Nice. Sounds like it's right up my alley.
One of my favorite, which I think is one of the funniest, is F Troop.
Oh, yeah.
Because any song that has the lyrics "both turn chicken" in it is just funny. And lo and behold, you go on YouTube or whatever it is, and not only do you get the lyrics, you get the black and white video,
right?
You get the audio. And Chris Berman, who is not a maven of the internet, I can tell you, he's very, very old school, stood there fascinated as we watched the theme song from F Troop. Now, F Troop was on the air 40 years ago in the 60s.
Yeah,
very
60s.
Funny TV show for people who don't know what I'm talking about and trying to figure out why the hell I'm bringing this up. But my point is this. If Paul Spicer said something 4 months ago, then F Troop is a drop in the bucket. So it is what it is. It'll be played up all week. It started early, and now the proof will be in the pudding when they line up against each other on Saturday night.
I also found somewhat curious, and I know that he had originally said this about a month or so ago, but Jeremy Green, who, of course, is Dennis Green's son, and he is a bigwig for Scouts, Inc., which is a part of the research department there on ESPN.com. Jeremy Green has also said that a month ago the Jaguars would beat the Pats, and he's also saying it now in predicting the playoff round this week that the Jaguars will beat the Patriots. And I guess he's a little bit more adamant this time that he thinks the Jaguars will beat the Patriots. I don't know if it's just so much because they're just sort of lone voices out in the wild, or if he's really, I guess, has belief in his convictions here. What are your thoughts in terms of guys making a stand where this is concerned?
Well, I have no problem with anybody sticking to their guns.
Mm-hmm.
I think the thing that's been the funniest watching my comrades at ESPN, to be bluntly honest, is trying to figure out which one of them actually said first that the Patriots would go undefeated. Because there is a duel of sorts. I've heard Tony Kornheiser said it in April. Mike Greenberg said it after, I think Greeny said it after they were 15-0.
Mm-hmm.
No, I'm just kidding. He said it, I think, sometime in September. So people, everybody wants to take the claim of being right. Okay, so if Jeremy, and you know, Jeremy's certainly entitled to his opinion, just like Greeny is, just like Tony is. But more and more, I think you even see with our industry that the guys who aren't necessarily the players want to put the crown on as saying, I was the first to say that Randy Moss would not be a disaster in New England. I was the first to say that Brett Favre would have a great comeback season. I was the first to say that Tony Romo was not a flash in the pan. We all want to be first now, I guess, in our business,
right?
And so on. So I guess it's something to hang a hat on. I just stick with my preseason predictions, watch everything else that comes around. For anybody who listened to what I said at the beginning of the year, I picked the Colts and the Eagles in the Super Bowl. Obviously, one will not happen. Obviously, one is still alive, and we'll cross that bridge when we get to it.
Fair enough. Now, as far as looking at this particular game, I mean, obviously, it's pretty easy to sort of see that Jacksonville's best defense may be their offense and ball control and whatever the case may be, and I'm sure there'll be some wrinkles thrown in. It very well is going to come down to the fact, you know, that most playoff games come down to basically two things, as far as I'm concerned. Obviously, I'd like for you to agree or disagree, whichever you prefer here. Number one, comes down to field position. Number two, comes down to turnovers. If these two teams turn the ball over, there's a good chance they lose. If they're in consistently poor field position, cause their offenses to go from further away, and in Jacksonville's case, that may even be a bigger burden to carry simply because they're not a built from coming from behind type of offense. However, turnovers, especially in the special teams game, can be deadly in the playoffs.
Yes. Well, turnovers, especially in the playoffs, and turnovers on special teams are such momentum killers.
Right.
And big plays on special teams are very big momentum killers. And there was no better example of that than watching the Pittsburgh Steelers last week march 80 yards down the field against the Jacksonville Jaguars. And then having Maurice Jones-Drew return the ensuing kickoff 96 yards to set up a very short touchdown run by Fred Taylor. And all the Steelers' work of 80 yards, and suddenly it's 7-7. So special teams, where the Patriots have always been good under the Bill Belichick era. One of my favorite games of the Patriots-Colts series is the 38-34 game at Indianapolis. More known for the goal line stand game, John.
Mm-hmm.
But to me, always remembered that Bethel Johnson returned the last play of the first half for a touchdown. Big momentum swing
right.
for them.
Right.
And then, after the Colts had come back from 31-10 to make it 31-31 in that game, Bethel Johnson returns the next kickoff into easy scoring range, and the Patriots look at the AFC Championship game last year.
Right.
I know New England wound up not winning the game, but after the Colts had exerted all that energy to get back in it, it was the kickoff returns and the special teams play of the Patriots that really kept the pressure on the Indianapolis Colts in that second half.
Right, so, and you can go back to the special teams play in the AFC Championship games against the Steelers as well. I mean, the big returns. And I mean, it's just, they really, they're not only momentum breakers. I think they're game winners and game losers. That's how important they are. And special teams obviously sometimes get you taking, field position gets you sometimes taking chances if you're in poor position that you might not ordinarily take in the course of a regular season.
The New England Patriots, in their first Super Bowl appearance of this current run, I'm not talking about against the Bears, and I'm not talking about the Packers, got to the Super Bowl by winning in Pittsburgh without Tom Brady throwing a touchdown pass.
Right.
He got hurt in the game. He got a Troy Brown punt return after a penalty, by the way, that gave Troy Brown a second chance, a penalty on the Steelers. A blocked field goal returned by the Patriots, and Drew Bledsoe coming in and throwing a touchdown pass. That year, the Patriots won the Super Bowl with their offense scoring one offensive touchdown in each playoff game. So there are other ways to get it done. And special teams is such a killer. And the play of the Jacksonville special teams has had its good and bad moments during the season. Maurice Jones-Drew is a huge factor on returns.
Mm-hmm.
But I also saw the end of the year, and you can take this for what it's worth because it was a loss to Houston the last game of the year. Andre Davis returned basically back-to-back kickoffs for touchdowns against the Jacksonville Jaguars. So Jacksonville's had its good and bad moments on special teams through the years, and this would not be a good time for them to have an off night.
Well, here's how I think this game basically boils down to, Russell. If Jacksonville, because this is an offense that is not as necessarily built to be quick-striking, if they don't get a quick lead in this thing, or if they don't match a quick score by the Patriots right off the bat, I think it'll be a very long day, and it could potentially be a long day for Jacksonville. That having been said, if they do score quickly, or let's say the Patriots score first and then Jacksonville holds onto the ball and matches it, makes it 7-7, say, going into the second quarter, then I think it can be a real dogfight, and this is where the turnovers and the special teams play, and certainly field position will come into play. But I think the first quarter is the key quarter here.
Oh, I don't think there's any question about it, because the Jacksonville Jaguars have to show that they're going to come into Gillette Stadium and play their game and not the New England Patriots game. We saw last week them rolling 28-10 and suddenly start doing stuff that's not necessarily them. They started just throwing the football,
mm-hmm.
constantly, killing clock, giving the Steelers more opportunity. The Jacksonville defense is very good, but their secondary is very iffy. And suddenly 28-10 became 29-28 Pittsburgh. If they're going to get into the kind of game that New England would love them to get into, then nobody does it better. You do not want to get into a free-for-all with a team that scored the most points in NFL history. But you want to go in there and do what you do best. Now, Jacksonville can do some very good things because they have two powerful backs. And I'll tell you something about it. I mean, Fred Taylor is a great story this year. There's no doubt about it.
By the way, justice served that he made the Pro Bowl.
Excuse me?
Justice served that he got on the Pro Bowl team.
Oh, yes. And listen, this guy's got, 17th in NFL history in rushing yards. He's had his great playoff moments, too, as you know, John. 90-yard touchdown play against the Miami Dolphins in that squeaker against Miami back in 99, the 62-7 game.
Mm-hmm.
No, Fred Taylor's labored a lot of yards, but Maurice Jones-Drew, he can beat you running. He can beat you receiving. He can beat you on returns. He can beat you as a blocker. Ask Sean Merriman about 6 or 7 weeks ago. This is a really solid football player, and he is everything I think everybody thought Reggie Bush would be. And he does things in some ways even better than Reggie Bush because he's a complete player. Reggie Bush is still kind of caught up in this running side to side like my windshield wipers. Maurice Jones-Drew hits the hole. He hits it with authority. He runs with power. He runs with quickness. He can beat you in a lot. He did something that had never been done in a playoff game last week. He run for a touchdown. He caught a touchdown pass, and he returned a kickoff 90-plus yards. I mean, this guy is serious. And it'll be just very, very interesting to see the mindset of the Jacksonville Jaguars because everybody is – I think everybody's been hearing that this is the team of all the teams who can go into Gillette Stadium because of their physical style of play, because of the size of their team and the size of their defense, and they'll be the team that can give New England the most problems. Jacksonville can't worry about that. Jacksonville has to go in there worrying about playing football. They can't go in there worrying about winning.
Yeah, that's true. I think that's very true. And this is the team I think we earmarked as being the potential most difficult first matchup for the Patriots that really existed. And we were talking about this as long as a month ago, that if Jacksonville was the team that was going to come into New England, that was the team that potentially could give the Patriots the most trouble because of their physical play.
These teams played in the playoffs 2 years ago. It was a very interesting, somewhat controversial game, not in the sense it was played because it was a one-sided game, but controversial in the sense that David Garrard, who had finished the season as the starting quarterback for Jacksonville because Byron Leftwich had got hurt, suddenly found himself on the bench, and Leftwich, who you could tell was not 100%, wound up starting the game. Garrard came in later, played very, very spottingly, but it was no contest. It was 28-3 New England. Jacksonville showed its inexperience. Now, for people who don't remember last year's game, New England against the quote-unquote big and physical Jacksonville Jaguars went down to Jacksonville the next to the last week of the regular season and ran the ball down Jacksonville's throat. Decisive game, not necessarily on the scoreboard, but I think people were surprised that, whoa, this is supposed to be a big and bad Jacksonville team. They were a couple weeks removed from beating the Colts 44-17, and New England went down to Jacksonville and beat them.
Right. That's absolutely correct. Yeah. I find it also kind of strange, kind of getting off on a different tangent here, but, even though these teams have had some matchups, certainly in the playoffs, that they really don't have a whole lot of history. Now, I realize that Jacksonville hasn't been around in the league that long, but Patriots have dominated what little history between the two teams there are. 6-1, although the one game that Jacksonville has won also came in the playoffs.
Yeah, these teams have met three previous times in the playoffs. And to say it's been a who's who of football when the in terms of the Patriots head coach in each of those meetings is an understatement. The first one was the AFC Championship in 96 when Bill Parcells was the head coach.
Correct.
It was a Jacksonville win, their only win of the series, in the playoffs in 98, like you just mentioned, when Pete Carroll was the coach.
Right.
And then, of course, 2 years ago when Bill Belichick was the coach. So safe to say there have been either some professional or college championships rung up by those three gentlemen.
Right, absolutely. All right, well, we'll come back a little bit to this game in a moment. I wanted to briefly touch on the other ones as well as we normally do from week to week in terms of trying to look at the schedule and such. But primarily, the other game coming up on Saturday. When's the kickoff of the first game, the NFC game on Saturday? Right off the top of my head, is it a 4 o'clock game?
It is 4:30 and 8 o'clock on Saturday.
Yep, Seattle
and
Green Bay.
And then, of course, 1 o'clock and 4:30 on Sunday.
Right, Seattle and Green Bay is the NFC game on Saturday. And Seattle, I thought, actually was fairly impressive in dismantling Washington last week. And Green Bay, obviously, there's a big sentimental favorite there, and everybody wants to see Brett Favre. It would appear that everybody would like to see Brett Favre succeed here. Does Seattle have enough momentum here, and can Green Bay continue to kind of keep the lightning in the bottle, so to speak, from the regular season?
Well, Green Bay is a team that played well down the stretch. They didn't really let that loss to Dallas affect them that much, although I will say they played a very, very sloppy game. I did not forget the sloppy game against Chicago, okay? So they might have showed a little bit of their inexperience, and I think that's the key to this game is inexperience. This is a Jacksonville team. Now, not all the parts, obviously, but a great part of this team is in the playoffs 5 years in a row, a team that's been to the Super Bowl recently. So you've got some experience here in a lot of regards. The thing that's also impressive about Seattle, John, is they've regained that speed on defense. You know, I don't think a lot of people realize when they went to the Super Bowl a couple of years ago, you know, they played Washington in divisional playoffs. They then throttled the Carolina Panthers, who went into the game with a lot of momentum. And then, again, I'll use the word controversial because there were more flags than the UN in this game, but the Super Bowl lost to the Steelers. My point is that both Carolina and Pittsburgh that year, I think, got surprised by the speed of Seattle's defense. Now, last year, you didn't really see it. It is evidently back again. You saw it last week. They play very fast on defense. Patrick Kearney had a big year. Surprisingly, Atlanta just let him go to Seattle. But you combine him with, Julian Peterson. Lofetutupu had a hell of an impact in his short stint in the NFL, becoming a perennial Pro Bowler and so on. Marcus Trufant, first Pro Bowl for him this year. Defensively, they are very impressive. Now, offensively, they border on being one-dimensional. They don't run with the authority they used to. Certainly, Sean Alexander doesn't run with the authority he's used to, but when they stick the other backs in there, like Maurice Morris, they seem like they run better.
Mm-hmm.
That being said, Green Bay has had a Cinderella type of season. They've gotten a lot of big plays out of Brett Favre, who has played within himself for the most part. The only game, and I'll throw out the Chicago game because I still think he was doing what got him there most of the year. The Dallas game, it seemed like he really tried to force things. The Chicago game, it was less about Brett Favre and more about Green Bay's punting game that day, which was really a disaster in the wind in Chicago. These teams met in the playoffs 4 years ago. Matt Hasselbeck, to his credit.
That was the game where he made the proclamation in overtime, right?
Yes,
yeah.
We're going to take it, we're going to score. He was half right. He threw a touchdown pass. Problem was he threw it to Al Harris, who plays for the other team, and Al Harris, of course, will be there.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a little bit of history here, and of course, the guy coaching the Seahawks has had somewhat success at Lambeau Field, not necessarily as the Seahawks coach, but certainly when he was Brett Favre's coach and they went to a couple of Super Bowls.
Right.
I think this is a toughie to pick because Seattle does come in with a lot of momentum, and you always feel like one of these teams that sits around, can they get it jump started again? Although I will say this has been around in the playoffs that, since you go back to 1990 with the bye weeks, the home team, pretty sparkling 78%, John, as far as winning, 53-15 as far as the winning for the home team in this round.
Really?
And in 6 of the 17 years, the home team won all 4 games. So one-third of the time, it's a clean sweep for the home teams.
This is in the divisional round, right?
In the divisional round, yes. Okay. Not the wild card, certainly not the championship round.
Okay.
But this is because you've got the 4 teams that are sitting against a team that's already been played. You can't overlook those numbers. That being said, Seattle comes in with some momentum. But offensively, they can bog down at times. And I think there'll be enough big plays from Brett Favre, either to the tight ends, either to Greg Jennings, who's become his Javon Walker, now that Javon Walker's gone. And I think Green Bay finds a way to get this done.
I would tend to agree at this stage of the game, only because I think they've probably been pointing to this at least this week, if not this particular opponent. I'm not convinced that Seattle has enough of quick strike power, certainly with the throwing game, although I guess it'll be interesting to see if Deion Branch he is back, correct, for Seattle?
He's expected to play this week, yes.
That's what I thought. That'll certainly add to the equation, but how effective it'll be, is anybody's guess, I would suppose.
Well, Seattle at times mystifies you. They got on a good roll when they decided to become more of a passing team than a running team, and then suddenly a couple weeks ago they laid an egg at Carolina. I don't look at the Atlanta game because they were throwing people in and out of the lineup in that one. But I think early in the year, Green Bay was more like Seattle because they were very one-dimensional. The fact that Green Bay has learned to run the football with Ryan Grant, I think is the difference here, and I think you'll see a couple bells and whistles from the Packers. I think this shapes up as a very entertaining game, and would not be surprised at all if we saw another overtime tilt. You know, what's funny is Seattle, I believe, has lost their last They're 1-6 lifetime on the road. Forget neutral sites like the Super Bowl. They're 1-6, and I believe they've lost 6 straight road playoff games. This is going back a long ways. The funny thing is, John, that 3 of those 6 have gone to overtime, and they've lost them all.
Wow.
So I'll just say for the hell of it, it was overtime 4 years ago. I say it's overtime again, and the Packers get it done.
Packers win in overtime. Very good. Let's jump ahead then real quickly to the other NFC game, which will be the Sunday afternoon 4:30 Eastern time kickoff. New York playing at Dallas. This is the matchup, if you follow the NFC, this is the matchup you want to see. This is the matchup I wanted to see as a longtime Cowboy fan. I wanted to see the Giants come in with all the momentum in the world. I wanted to see the Giants coming off a great performance against the Patriots. I thought the Giants were superb last week in the opening round of the playoffs. They got off the schneid. They bailed out Eli a little bit. And now the Cowboys are the enigma because they kind of mailed it in toward the end of the regular season. So which one has the edge?
Well, I am very happy to hear you not say those dreaded sentence, gee, isn't it hard to beat a team 3 times in 1 season? Thank God you didn't say that, because as we
know. No, I don't think it's hard to beat a team 3 times in a season.
That's correct. That's correct. But usually I get somebody once a year, always throw that out there. And for people who don't know what I'm talking about, if you go back to the merger, this will be the 18th time that teams have played each other 3 times in a season, where the instance was that the one team won the first 2 games.
Okay.
So 17 previous time before the playoff game, a team had swept the regular season series. In 11 of the 17 instances, the team also won the 3rd game.
That's a pretty good record, 11-6.
Throw that right out.
Yep.
It's the old Burt Reynolds, Ray Nitschke mode. When Burt Reynolds aimed a pass at Ray Nitschke's in the longest yard.
Right, the original longest
yard. The original.
Yes.
And then after that play worked, he went back to the huddle and said, worked once, it'll work again. Now, no truth to the rumor that Eli Manning last week tried a similar pass to Brandon Jacobs for a touchdown pass down near the goal line. There were a lot of similarities there, John. But we digress. I think you set it up as well as it can be set up. Dallas has surprised me with the way they have kind of, for a lot of reasons, not looked sharp ever since the Green Bay game.
Right.
Seemed like after they won that, we all agreed that they're going to get home field advantage, which eventually they wound up clinching. But they did not look good against Detroit, had to come back and win that game. They looked flat against Philadelphia, looked iffy against Carolina. You know, you take what you want out of the Washington game, although I found it, you can walk across the street and get more than 1 yard rushing. And the fact that they got 1 yard rushing on 16 carries, this is a team that needs to run the football. Now, the New York Giants come in here, and here's what you got to know. Their defense is predicated on their pass rush. I know they only sacked Jeff Garcia 1 time technically last week, but they were in his face most of the afternoon. When they played against the Cowboys in the 2 games they played this year, I want to say Tony Romo had 8 touchdown passes. 4 in each game.
Okay.
He's only sacked twice total in those 2 games.
Cowboys do have that big, strong offensive line.
Exactly. And that is the game. That, to me, is the game. It's less about Dallas's defense, and it's more about Dallas's offensive line and can they protect. Now, I think I would like Dallas decisively here if they really came out and pushed around that defensive line of the New York Giants by running the football. But I don't think they'll necessarily do that. I know T.O. is a question mark. We've seen him rally and play hurt before. I'll be very, very surprised if he doesn't play. But I'm probably going to disappoint you here a little, John, and I'm actually leaning toward the New York Giants.
Well, I'm not sorry that you said that, because I do have great concerns as someone who follows the Cowboys and has for more than 40 years. I also believe that the Giants have an excellent opportunity to win this football game. I hope they don't, but I'm just saying I'm trying to look at this thing somewhat impartially, and I would have to agree. New York has it going right now.
I just think, it'll be really interesting to see. This is where Wade Phillips earns his money. We heard a lot about, Bill Parcells and, wearing out the troops and being a little more, more discipline-oriented, and Wade had a different style. But, Wade has taken 2 teams to the playoffs before, and Wade Phillips has not won with those teams in the playoffs. So we shall see. But I'm kind of leaning toward the New York Giants to pull a little bit of surprise here, and we'll get a Week 2 rematch of the Green Bay Packers and the New York Giants in the NFC Championship game.
Interesting. All right, and then, of course, the AFC divisional game, other than the Patriots and the Jaguars, San Diego at Indianapolis. I know that's the game the Patriots fans definitely wanted to see. I mean, there's Tennessee would have been great just because it would have been, in theory, an easier opponent to face, but I think we all realize that's really not necessarily the case. And I'm not so sure, even though San Diego has come in and proven they can win because they did in the regular season at Indianapolis, I'm not so sure that Indianapolis just doesn't roll right over them this time.
My favorite, one of my favorite stats of the year that very few people have answered correctly. What team in the NFL this year gave up the fewest points in the league?
Fewest points in the league was Indy.
Yes.
Wasn't it?
Not a lot of people know that, John.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, not a lot of people know that. Remember, this is a team that last year gave up 360 points, which was the most ever by a team to win the Super Bowl. This year they gave up 262. Their defensive unit gave up 26 touchdowns, which was tied for most in the NFL, or tied for the fewest
right.
in the NFL. They have the new defensive player of the year in Bob Sanders. This is a team that really swarms around the football. There's no doubt in my mind we'll see Marvin Harrison. This is a team that also remembers the last time they played the San Diego Chargers. Darren Sproles returned a kickoff and a punt for touchdown in one quarter.
That's correct.
Peyton Manning threw an incredible six interceptions.
Right.
And yet, if it weren't for a missed field goal, inexplicably, or surprisingly by Adam Vinatieri, a chip shot relatively, they would have won that game anyway. And I also remember a play in that game which I don't really get on the refs all that much, but blowing the whistle on a what shaped up as basically like a 105 or 106-yard interception return off a magnificent play off a deflected pass that went off a guy's hip was wiped out because they blew the whistle. So Indy's defense held the Chargers to about 170, I want to say it was 177 yards in the last game. Now, San Diego's beaten them the last couple of times. They beat them in Indy a couple years ago when they were 13-0. But I agree with you. Not having Antonio Gates is also a major problem for San Diego. Phil Berbers had a big game last week, but I don't think he's going to get that many opportunities against Indianapolis' secondary. And the Colts are defending champions for a reason, and I think they're going to show it against the San Diego Chargers.
I would agree, and I think that brings us back then full circle to the Pats and the Jaguars then again on Saturday night, and obviously whoever survives that San Diego-Indy matchup is going to know if they're going to travel or if by some chance they're actually going to get a chance to host an AFC Championship game if that if the upset does occur on Saturday night. There are some that are saying, as we talked about just a little while ago, that if there is to be an upset, this is the spot where it could occur. Do you concur with that?
I do not. I think I'll wait another week per my preseason pick.
Well, and you should go with the team that you picked all along.
Of course I do.
I would naturally agree with that.
Of course I do.
Yeah.
But I'm interested in Jacksonville's mindset. And last week, I just thought it was interesting that at times they looked like they showed still some immaturity. Now, physically, I'm not worried about them. Mentally, you know, I said this over the weekend to someone. San Diego and Jacksonville last week won game playoff games. They really needed to win them to kind of get their new program started. But in both instances, they really kind of got away with one, John. And they can't afford to play like that this week if they're going to beat the two big boys in New England and Indianapolis. And I think Jacksonville is going to have to do some things a lot better, play better pass defense, be a little more committed to the run. And I think you saw a little nervousness out of David Garrard last week, who his first playoff start threw two picks. He only threw three during the regular season. I think New England will give them a few looks. I think New England will try to quick strike them and take them out of their game. The difference between throwing when you want to and throwing when you have to is yards apart.
Oh, yeah.
And I like the New England Patriots to continue their track.
I wouldn't be at all surprised to see the no-huddle offense come out just so Jacksonville can't make substitutions. Again, just try to move it right down the field on them quickly. And again, as I said, I think the first quarter is most important for Saturday night.
I definitely agree.
Russell, great to visit with you again. Thank you for the little change in schedule this afternoon. It's greatly appreciated. And perhaps we should plan on looking at the two championship games next Thursday.
I'm in touch with that emotion.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that. Enjoy the weekend.
You too.
Thanks, Russell. That's Russell Baxter, once again, who is the NFL research coordinator for ESPN. And he joins us on Thursdays. And, again, we're kind of in a Thursday mode here on the program today because of the shorter week with the Saturday game as opposed to the Sunday game. We're going to get in a timeout here. The email address, again, is webradio@patriots.com. If you want to predict the game, if you want to give me a score, if you want to say I think the Patriots are going to take advantage of Paul Spicer's big mouth and they're going to romp, or if you actually believe that you think Jacksonville's got a shot to win this thing, all right, now is your time to do it. I don't know how much time we're going to have to do emails in tomorrow's show. So if you have any inkling at all to get your thoughts out about the matchup with the Jaguars this weekend, speak now or email now. Or forever hold your peace, because it may be a moot point after Saturday. Webradio@patriots.com. That's how you reach us here on the program. We'll take a timeout. We've got much more still to come today, right inside the playbook.
When you've got a lineman-size hunger and want the awesome, authentic taste of Gillette Stadium at your tailgate or right at home, tackle that appetite with Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Try Sac Attack sausages, first down Franks, or Patriots brats in a wide variety of flavors at home, at the stadium, or at the game. And get your crowd cheering for Gridiron Grillers. They're great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are all you need for the perfect tailgate or home barbecue. Check out all of the Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Meyer and hot Sac Attack sausages, Patriots cheese brats and beer brats, first down Franks and more. Patriots Gridiron Grillers go great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are available at Big Y, Demoulas Market Basket, Hannaford, Johnny's Foodmaster, Roach Brothers Sudbury Farm, Shaw's and Stop and Shop, and distributed by Agar, Associated Grocers of Maine and Associate Grocers of New England and CNS Wholesale. Patriots Gridiron Grillers, when you just can't wait for Sunday.
All right, Jimmy, it's the big day, and we got to go. Patriots kick off in an hour. Let's make sure we got everything.
All right, let's see. Face paint.
Check.
Helmets.
Check.
Foam fingers.
Check.
Jerseys.
Check.
Checks.
Check.
Check card.
Check.
That's everything.
Let's go, Pats!
Woo!
Let's go, Pats! Let's go, Pats! Let's go!
Check, check, check. That's right. If you really are a true Patriots fan, then you need to open a New England Patriots checking account from Bank of America today. You'll get checks, check cards, and even bank statements, all with the official New England Patriots logo. Bank of America is the official bank of the New England Patriots. So take advantage of this opportunity to make every day game day.
Let's go, Pats!
Woo! And sign up for a New England Patriots checking account today. Bank of America. Bank of Opportunity.
Bank of America N.A. Member FDIC. New England Patriots trademarks, including the Patriots logo, are the property of New England Patriots L.P. and are used pursuant to a licensing agreement with New England Patriots L.P. 2007 Bank of America Corporation. All rights reserved.
He's been a three-time champion, two-time Super Bowl MVP, and kicked off 2007 on a record pace.
Three touchdown passes in the first half.
Now Tom Brady has signed official Patriots mini replica helmets, and you can get one free exclusively from the New England Patriots. This authentic mini helmet comes complete with chin strap, face mask, and Tom Brady's autograph. Perfect for every Patriots fan. To take advantage of this incredible one-of-a-kind offer, all you need to do is make qualifying transactions on your Bank of America Patriots Extra Points Visa card. Plus, with your card, you'll earn Patriots Extra Points redeemable for once-in-a-lifetime Patriots experiences, pregame field passes, memorabilia, merchandise, tickets, and much more. Don't wait. Apply at PatriotsExtraPoints.com or call 1-800-NFL-9920. To get your Bank of America Patriots Extra Points Visa card and a free official mini replica helmet autographed by Tom Brady. Patriots Extra Points, because fans want contact too. Autographed mini helmet limited to those making a qualifying purchase. See details at PatriotsExtraPoints.com.
Pro Bowlers, and the fact that Jacksonville only had one, and of course, Fred Taylor just was named to the team officially yesterday as an injury replacement for Willie Parker, then quite frankly, I do believe that they've got plenty of the old boulder on the shoulder to kind of get after. You know, they can definitely, Jack Del Rio, their head coach, can definitely play the disrespect card. This, of course, we know has been almost the exclusive domain of the New England Patriots for the last several years, maybe every year in this entire decade. The Patriots have played the disrespect card and used it very well, much to their advantage. Now, the shoe's on the other foot. And this is where I think this is the great X factor going in. This is where you just don't know. How do teams respond when A, they have the disrespect card on their shoulder, and B, you're used to having that, and yet you're thrust into the role of the heavy favorite, the big bad bullies. And that's what the Patriots are right now. They're the team that used to be the team that played the disrespect card. That's not the case now. In what way can the Patriots possibly turn this around and use that? I'm not sure there is one, although Paul Spicer did a little bit to help himself, or shall I say, help the Patriots in that regard, and not exactly help himself or his teammates in that regard. See, the Patriots are saying, well, Jesus, Spicer feels that way. What do the other guys in the locker room think? You know, they don't really put any credit into what we've done. I mean, regardless of what you think about what might have happened back after week one in the Jets, you know, you don't think that you know, the Patriots will find a way to play that disrespect card based on the other 15 weeks, I think. See, that's why I can't, but when I heard that he had said that, and I heard all the stuff happen yesterday about that, and I'm like, you've got to be kidding me. When do they learn? Why are some people idiots? That had to be one of the single most moronic things I heard come from a player's mouth in a long, long time. Why would you stoke the fires when you know good and doggone well that the Patriots thrive on that kind of situation? He's just not a very smart man. And you notice that everyone else that has been asked about his comments, from Jack Del Rio right on down, has said, hey, well, you know, it is what it is. They're just words. Or, you know, we still have to go out and perform on the field. And they're very short. They're almost curt with their comments in responding to Spicer. What that tells me, gang, having been around a locker room or two, what that tells me is that they jumped on him pretty doggone quickly. They might have beaten him into submission. What, are you an idiot? What, are you a moron? What are you doing? Keep your stinking mouth shut. There's no doubt in my mind. There's absolutely no doubt in my mind. This will be the eighth time in history that the Patriots and Jaguars have faced off against each other. And, of course, as Russell told us just a short while ago, the teams last met in the playoffs following the 2005 regular season, 2 years ago, when the Patriots won 28-3 at Gillette. So this is officially the second time in 3 years that these two teams have met in the postseason. In fact, out of the seven previous meetings between the Patriots and Jaguars, again, in which the Patriots have won six of those seven previous meetings, three of them have been in the playoffs. Of course, the 20-6 win at then Foxborough Stadium in January of 97 for the AFC Championship that put the Patriots in that Super Bowl against Green Bay. And then, of course, they lost a divisional playoff game in 1999 when Pete Carroll was still coaching the Patriots at Alltel Stadium in Jacksonville. Lost that one 25-10 in Jacksonville. That's the only win that Jacksonville has over New England. Of course, then the Patriots then won a couple of years ago at Gillette 28-3. So the last time these two teams, in fact, played in the regular season was also back in that, it was actually the 06 season. So it was last year. Patriots won 24-21 at the tail end of last season, again in Jacksonville. So just a very short history, but a lot of it is dominated by games that certainly have or had meaning. And if you're wondering about the rest of the series trends and playoff records and all that kind of stuff, the Patriots in this playoff round, the divisional playoff round of the AFC playoffs, Patriots are 7-5 all time. They have won four of the last five divisional playoff games that they have participated in. And that starts with the Snow Bowl, the 16-13 overtime win over Oakland. They followed that with a win in a bitterly cold night in Foxborough, as I'm sure several of you remember, against Tennessee in 2004, a 17-14 win over the Titans. And then a 20-3 win over Indianapolis 2 years ago, when the Patriots defense might have had their single best performance ever in a playoff situation when they just crushed the Colts that day. The last loss came in the divisional round at Denver after the 2005 regular season on January the 14th of 2006. The game at Denver in which the Patriots lost 27-13. So that was the last time they lost in this round of the playoffs. And, of course, last year they won the divisional playoff at San Diego by surprising the Chargers, who at the time had the best record in the NFL at 15-1 during the regular season, and they managed to win it 24-21. So there's a little bit of a history, a little bit of background, a little bit of trying to pick up from basically where we come from, where this one is concerned, on Saturday. Quick email here, and then we're going to get you inside the Patriots locker room coming up. We've got some locker room interviews from earlier today at Gillette Stadium. Mike Vrabel, Kyle Brady, and Rodney Harrison upcoming for you here in just a couple of moments. In the meantime, Dagmar from Miami sends this note. He says, John, Jacksonville is a well-balanced team. It is going to be a good matchup for our team on every side of the ball. There will always be someone to open his mouth and say whatever to call the attention. I definitely give a lot of respect to the Jaguars. It is that time of the season where your playbook has to be marked on those special pages, and players need to make sure that be on them. In other words, focus is what is going to help this team in those situational moments. And the Jaguars can definitely push us, he says, to that situational edge. Let's remember, we're in the playoffs. Every team is good. I pray for our Pats and for this wonderful season they have given us already. Go Pats. My thanks go to all the Patriots Network and Kraft Sports Production Group for their amazing job throughout the season. See, there you go. Everybody gets a little kudos. Thanks, Dagmar. Appreciate the email. No doubt, I think that you're absolutely right when you say that the Jaguars have the type of team that can push the Patriots to a situational edge. No doubt. The coin flip may be the most crucial coin flip of the entire season, because there's no doubt in my mind that whoever wins the coin flip on Saturday night is going to take the football. And if you're Jacksonville, you're going to take the football and you're going to try to grind and you're going to try to push and you're going to cajole and you're going to move the ball on the ground as best as you possibly can. And you're going to try to chew up 7, 8, 9 minutes on the clock in the opening drive of the football game, and you want to get points out of it. Even if it's a field goal, you have to get points. Conversely, if the Patriots win the coin flip on Saturday, I expect them to come out in 5 wide. Maybe even a little no huddle. Who knows? And I think that they'll try to wing it down the field and jump on the Jaguars as quickly as they possibly can. That's what I personally would expect. What do you expect? Webradio@patriots.com. That's the email address. If you want to give us your thoughts on the game, now is the time to do so. All right, let's get you into, in the second hour of the program, we'll hear from Patriots coach Bill Belichick. I believe we'll also hear from Ty Warren and Junior Seau coming up in the next hour of the program as well. And we are anticipating, and we hope that this will occur, we're anticipating a visit from Vic Ketchman, who is the Jaguars.com senior editor, so we can kind of get their viewpoint as well. That's not yet confirmed, but we're hopeful that that can happen, and it will come up in the second hour of the program. In the meantime, though, let's get you inside the Patriots locker room and let you know what the guys are thinking today, as we are now just 3 days away from kickoff in this AFC divisional matchup. Mike Vrabel, Kyle Brady, Rodney Harrison.
Mike Vrabel.
You'll have one back that'll come in, it'll be a change of pace. When you have Fred Taylor and Maurice Jones-Drew, are they interchangeable, or do you look for different things when each is using them?
Well, I mean, I think they like to throw the ball to Drew a little more than they like to throw it to Taylor. But, you know, when you talk about them running the ball, this, you know, they're not drawing up any plays differently for one guy or the other. They're both running them well, you know, averaging. One's over 5 and one's close to 5. So, really, two good backs, you know, complete backs. They can run. Both can catch, you know, screens. Drew's out of the backfield, and then block. You know, they block.
How rare is it, Mike, to face an offense where everyone that you see
that they throw out there is just big. I mean, from the quarterback to the running backs to the
It's the National Football League. I mean, there's a lot of, you know, we play against a lot of big guys every week. You know, the lines are big. You know, backs run hard. So, I mean, I don't know what size is going to matter. You know, everybody's big every week.
Michael, a lot of people talk about this as a team that's scary. No one wants to face them, but you guys are coming off the bye, 16-0. You like flying under the radar?
Well, who said they didn't want to play him?
Well, you know, a lot of people say this is a scary
Who
team.
Said it?
Well, just a lot of...
In his locker room?
No, just a lot
Right,
of
exactly. So, I mean... We play whoever's up. You know, we got to play. You know, they beat a good Pittsburgh team last week, and now so, you know, now it's our turn to try to take them. You know, and play against them.
Mike, does Garrard present any different problems for you guys as far or challenges as far as his mobility compared to some other quarterbacks we've seen?
Well, I mean, I think that you know his ability to stay efficient and be really smart with the ball and make some big time throws. Coupled with the fact that when you look at the game last week, 4th-and-2 with their season on the line, you know, they got a lot of options. Drew and Taylor to run the ball with, they chose to keep it in his hands. So I think that tells you where their confidence level is with him getting 2 yards against Pittsburgh's defense. So thanks, guys.
Kyle Brady.
The bottom line with those guys. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, they are all effective in their own ways. Yeah, different styles between them, different sizes and speeds and quicknesses and that kind of thing, but all are effective in their own way.
It's smart for you to have a playoff game against some guys that you have a little familiar with over there. It's going to be a little bit more special for you.
Yeah, it should be fun. Yeah, I mean, I have such high degree of familiarity with these guys, being that I spent 8 years there. It's a long time with any one organization, so there'll be some talking and some friendly John and that kind of thing. So you may put a little something on it with David already.
How surprising was it to see them put it in David's hands, 4th-and-2? I'm sure you're watching the game there.
not real surprising in some ways, though. I mean, they have a lot of confidence in him as a quarterback and as a guy that has his hands on the ball in critical situations to do something like that, to run the ball. He's got a unique ability to not only throw the ball to open receivers, but also take off and run when he needs to. And he certainly did it well that play.
Yeah. Can you talk about the challenges you guys possibly face? You know, blocking that defensive front, as big as they are.
Yeah, they're a bunch of big, strong guys.
You've faced a lot of those guys, haven't
you? I have. Yeah, I mean, in practice, every preseason, it always prepared us well as an offense, though, going against those guys for each season. So they've just had a lot of strength and quickness with the size and strength, so they're a very challenging group to go against.
Any of the guys in the locker room picking your brain for little tidbits that maybe the coaches haven't picked up on yet?
A little bit, yeah. I mean, a few questions here and there. It's pretty evident the things they're trying to do when they're out there in the field, when you watch film and stuff like that. But maybe just for some little things.
Yeah. They keep talking about how physical the Jacksonville team is. How much of it is the players that they draft, and how much of it is Jack Del Rio and his influence upon them once they get there?
I think it's a combination. It's certainly is their philosophy on both sides of the ball. So I think they look for players that fit that bill. So I think the two go hand in hand. They like players with that kind of mentality, and then they continue to breed it into them in a sense when they're there.
What does he do to breed it into? I mean, does he talk about being physical? Does he drills to make it? What does he do?
It's all of the above, really. I mean, it's talked about. It's talked about as being the mentality that they want to have and want to exude on the field. And then, they just go out and practice and work being that way. You know, and if you have a play where you're not physical enough, they're going to let you know. So it's just expected.
In the time you spent there, you kind of built up your own little dossier on the guys' tendencies, you know, Spicer and you know, all those guys that you're familiar with.
Yeah, you get so familiar with each other. You get sick of each other, actually. I mean, because in the preseason, you're seeing so much of each other. You always hear at the end of the preseason that everybody in the league talking about, oh, we finally get to hit someone else. You know, we're beating each other up so much. So, yeah, you do. I've got a high degree of familiarity with them, and the same can be said about them with me, too. You know, they know what things I like to do and stuff. So, in some ways, you think it can be an advantage, but they've got the same.
Yeah. Give us your thumbnail sketch on that defensive front.
They're as advertised. You know, what you hear about them is true, that they're big and strong, physical guys, and they've got a few real quick guys, too. And you have to be ready for just about everything, really. I mean, you know, Spicer and Hayward are bigger and more physical guys. McCray's a quicker guy, and then there's Brent Hawkins who plays out there and in sometimes in rush situations, and he's a quick guy with a good number of moves and everything, and so you just have to be ready for everything.
Rodney Harrison.
Because you guys went 16-0, that everybody expects you to win.
I don't think everyone expects us to win. I think a lot of people expect us to lose. I think the normal mindset of people basically is, you know, eventually they're going to lose a game. Eventually. Why not with Jacksonville? So, for us, our mindset is not 16-0, but we're 0-0 right now. And we're all starting at the bottom. And, we got to go win. You either win or you go home.
Talked about the receivers, but they also talked about the running backs being home run kind of running backs.
Mm-hmm.
What kind of challenges does that bring to you guys in the second?
1-2 punch. I mean, they can impose their will on you because they have two physical running backs that, I mean, both of those guys are like 4-3, 4-4 guys that can get the ball, take it to the house, very physical, big offensive line, big receivers in the run game. I mean, as well as they can get the ball down the field. So these guys can make plays with their legs, but they can also make plays catching the ball in the passing game.
Do you think there's any concern about the matchup of your run defense against their defense?
I don't think it is. I mean, for us, I mean, we're not like, I mean, you're concerned about it, but not overly concerned like you're scared or anything like that. I mean, it's an opportunity for us to go against probably the best running team in the National Football League, whether statistically or what have you. And really just stand up to them. I mean, they're big, they're physical, but we feel like we're physical as well. So, I mean, and if we couldn't play defense, trust me, we wouldn't have the type of success that we've had this year.
Do you expect this to be the most physical game you guys have had so far? I mean, that word just keeps coming up when describing this.
I think when you speak of the playoffs and the intensity and the magnitude of this game, I think definitely this is going to be a very physical game because, I mean, you have the entire offseason to heal. So you better come ready, you better bring your big boy pads on, and you better get ready to knock somebody's head off.
Because you had the year you had, does it make it any more of a disappointment if someone does beat you? You know what I mean?
Well, the guy asked me that in the press conference, and really my mindset hasn't been on losing. My mindset is really remaining positive and on the preparation and everything we have to do to get ready for this game. So that losing thought and mindset hasn't even crossed my mind. We go out there to win, and that's our only goal.
What about Gerard? Does he present different challenges with his mobility than some of the other guys?
Well, I think obviously, I mean, if he's not a traditional, you know, stand in the pocket type guy, of course he, you know, because he hurt Pittsburgh with his legs. I mean, that crucial, was it 4th-and-2 or whatever, he was able to run 30 yards or so, juke to safety and make some yardage to really set up that score. So, of course, he poses a threat with us with his legs because the guy, he had maybe 18 touchdowns and 3 interceptions during the regular season, so he's not turning the ball over. And he's playing very efficient, and he's very confident, and he's a smart player.
Can you compare him to any other quarterback
I don't even remember. I mean, my mind is so focused on Jacksonville, I don't really remember who else we played. And maybe like a Cleo Lemon, a very guy that can – very elusive, he's a lot bigger than Cleo Lemon, but very strong. And sort of like Ben Roethlisberger, he'll scramble and he'll get the ball down the field so you can never give up on him.
That's Rodney Harrison in the Patriots locker room earlier today at Gillette Stadium. As we get into hour number 2 of Patriots Playbook, I'm John Rook. Pratt, our friend from Germantown, Maryland, sends this email. He says, I think this game, John, will be close early on, and the Patriots will take complete control and put it out of reach by the fourth quarter. My prediction is the Pats will win by 11 or more. John, I'm reading a lot of articles written by various sports writers online, and they continue to say that the Colts are dangerous, as they don't have the pressure on them to win, as Peyton Manning has finally won his ring, and the fact that nobody's talking about the Colts. It's all Patriots all over the media. I find this a bit ridiculous coming from these writers, because they're the ones who hyped up the Patriots, and rightfully so, as they're the single team to go 16-0. So the media is trying to scare Patriots fans that they will have a rude awakening when they play the Colts. They honestly think the Pats are giving a hoot about the media attention they are receiving. I don't think a Bill Belichick coach team can ever care about media-created hype with respect to themselves or teams like Jacksonville, Pittsburgh, and the Colts as teams that could knock them off in the playoffs. I think the Pats know that this season means nothing unless they achieve 19-0. And all of us fans should be proud and be confident that they will not fold or fall to any outer pressure set by the media. And, of course, you heard Rodney speak a little toward that just a couple of moments ago, so that's why I want to bring up Pratt's email. Very timely. Pratt, appreciate that. Squeezing a timeout here, we've got much more to come here in hour number two, Patriots Playbook.
When you've got a lineman-size hunger and want the awesome, authentic taste of Gillette Stadium at your tailgate or right at home, tackle that appetite with Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Try Sac-A-Tac sausages, first down Franks, or Patriots brats in a wide variety of flavors at home, at the stadium, or at the game. And get your crowd cheering for Gridiron Grillers. They're great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are all you'll need for the perfect tailgate or home barbecue. Check out all of the Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Mild and hot Sac-A-Tac sausages, Patriots cheese brats and beer brats, first down Franks and more. Patriots Gridiron Grillers go great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are available at Big Y, Demoulas Market Basket, Hannaford, Johnny's Foodmaster, Roach Brothers Sudbury Farm, Shaw's and Stop and Shop, and distributed by Agar, Associated Grocers of Maine and Associate Grocers of New England and CMS Wholesale. Patriots Gridiron Grillers, when you just can't wait for Sunday.
All right, Jimmy, it's the big day, and we gotta go. Patriots kick off in an hour. Let's make sure we got everything.
All right, let's see. Face paint.
Check.
Helmets.
Check.
Foam fingers.
Check.
Jerseys.
Check.
Checks.
Check.
Check card.
Check.
That's everything.
Let's go, Pats!
Woo!
Let's go, Pats! Let's go, Pats! Let's go!
Check, check, check. That's right. If you really are a true Patriots fan, then you need to open a New England Patriots checking account from Bank of America today. You'll get checks, check cards, and even bank statements, all with the official New England Patriots logo. Bank of America is the official bank of the New England Patriots. So take advantage of this opportunity to make every day game day.
Let's go, Pats!
Woo! And sign up for a New England Patriots checking account today. Bank of America. Bank of Opportunity.
Bank of America N.A. Member FDIC. New England Patriots trademarks, including the Patriots logo, are the property of New England Patriots L.P. and are used pursuant to a licensing agreement with New England Patriots L.P. 2007 Bank of America Corporation. All rights reserved.
He's been a three-time champion, two-time Super Bowl MVP, and kicked off 2007 on a record pace.
Three touchdown passes in the first half.
Now, Tom Brady has signed official Patriots mini replica helmets, and you can get one free exclusively from the New England Patriots. This authentic mini helmet comes complete with chin strap, face mask, and Tom Brady's autograph. Perfect for every Patriots fan. To take advantage of this incredible one-of-a-kind offer, all you need to do is make qualifying transactions on your Bank of America Patriots Extra Points Visa card. Plus, with your card, you'll earn Patriots Extra Points redeemable for once-in-a-lifetime Patriots experiences, pregame field passes, memorabilia, merchandise, tickets, and much more. Don't wait. Apply at PatriotsExtraPoints.com or call 1-800-NFL-9929 to get your Bank of America Patriots Extra Points Visa card and a free official mini replica helmet autographed by Tom Brady. Patriots Extra Points, because fans want contact too. Autographed mini helmet limited to those making a qualifying purchase. See details at PatriotsExtraPoints.com.
Welcome back inside Patriots Playbook as we roll along here on a Wednesday slash Thursday. Again, it's sort of a Thursday programming day here because of the shorter work week with a Saturday night game, and so things are a little bit discombobulated. By the way, I want to take just a moment here to thank Mike Perini and Chris Price for hosting the show yesterday. I was out on the road traveling, in fact, during the normal show time from 2 to 4 p.m. Eastern time, so those guys were kind enough to host Playbook for us yesterday. Mike, of course, does a lot of work for the Woonsocket Call and the Journal Register newspapers throughout New England. Chris Price for the Boston Metro, and I'm sure many of you have read Chris Price's book that he wrote on the Patriots' dominance and the alleged dynasty and how it was built and all that kind of good stuff. And in fact, I just finished reading the book. Someone had passed it on to me. I hadn't had a chance to read it, and I just wrapped it up on a train ride yesterday afternoon. Sort of ironic that it turned out that way. And I have to admit, I thought it was great. Easy read, very quick. It was great to get some of the inside knowledge on how the Patriots basically have turned themselves around from this, you know, sad sack, also ran of a franchise that many of us are all too familiar with, into a team that is now being copied by almost literally every other team in the National Football League in some form or fashion. So great read anyway, and so I thank those two guys for hosting Playbook for us yesterday, and I'm sure that that will happen again at some point in time. In the meantime, I don't know if you're aware of this, but Tom Brady, 3-0 against Jacksonville, has not thrown ever an interception against the Jaguars. Now, he didn't throw many interceptions this year at all, but he hasn't thrown an interception against the Jaguars ever. He's only played them three times. I realize that's not a lot. But in three starts against the Jags, he has six touchdowns, no picks. Passer rating, I think, is like 104, 105, somewhere around in there. So it's, you know, pretty decent performance. He hasn't had to be able to wing it down the field, certainly not in the former fashion that he has done this year. But he's never thrown a pick. Let me hit knock wood, reverse whammy, that kind of stuff. I don't want to jinx anybody here. This game this week, we know the Patriots have set the scoring record, right? Highest scoring team all time NFL single season history. Did you know, however, that this game on Saturday will not only feature the highest scoring team, but also the second highest scoring team in the second half of this past season? That's right, the Jaguars. The Patriots scored 258 points in the final eight games. The Jaguars scored 256 points in the last eight games of the regular season. So that was ranked 1 and 2 in the NFL in highest scoring. I'll bet you didn't know that. Jacksonville's eminently capable moving the football, and when they do get in the red zone, of putting the ball in the end zone. David Garrard, there's a reason why Jack Del Rio and the Jaguars chose him ultimately Dan, were you talking to me? Aha, there we go. Great. All right, good. I'll continue that thought in just a moment because Vic Ketchman, who is the senior editor for Jaguars.com, joined us here inside the playbook. Vic, John Rook here. Very nice of you to take the time to visit with us for a couple of minutes. Thank you.
Oh, you're very welcome. I'm flattered.
don't be. It's okay. hey, I was just talking about how the reason why the Jacksonville Jaguars decided to go with David Garrard to begin with when they had an opportunity to make a choice at quarterback. And the reason, at least, that I thought that they had done that is because Garrard is a guy that might be singularly unspectacular, but he doesn't do a lot to beat himself or his team. And I think that was the kind of model that the team was looking for. Agree or disagree?
That's good, except if you were on the inside and you witnessed this as it unfolded day by day, you wouldn't have that opinion.
Okay.
He just buried Byron Leftwich, who's a great guy, and I hope he has a great career. But Byron was reinstated on February 22nd as the team's starting quarterback, which may have been the earliest time in history that a guy was picked as the starting quarterback for a season. And so we had it all through OTAs, this reinstatement. And don't forget that Garrard had finished the previous season as the starting quarterback, and then we go into training camp with this, and it was about the second week of training camp that Leftwich was playing well early in camp. About the second week in training camp, that Garrard just went to another level. He just became an eye-popping performer, and it wasn't his ability to throw the ball away. It wasn't his ability to avoid interceptions in training camp and in the preseason games that shot his stock up to the point that Jack Del Rio made him the starting quarterback. It was the fact that he was playing at an eye-popping level. Touchdown passes and 70-80% completion percentages in the preseason games and long drives and big plays. He took his game to another level, and I can remember the day in practice in training camp it started. Just all of a sudden the light went on, and he became the one thing that he had never previously become, and that's to say an accurate passer. All of a sudden the ball was on the receiver's hands. It was chest high. It was on the right hip. It was out in front of the receiver on a deep ball. It was nose down. Just everything was perfect. And he held that the entire season. I really don't see him as having been just an efficient quarterback all season long. Truth be known, it's his receivers that are efficient at best. He doesn't have a Randy Moss. He doesn't have a Wes Welker. He doesn't have a Jabbar Gaffney in many ways. He has a very, very average cast of receivers, and he has made the most of their talents. He's one of three quarterbacks, I believe, in the league this year to finish the season with a passer rating of 100 or above.
Right.
The other two being Brady and Roethlisberger.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason why his touchdown passes are low as compared to, obviously, Brady and Roethlisberger and Romo and Anderson in Cleveland and Palmer in Cincinnati, et cetera, is because he had, first of all, missed three games. It was actually four games. He hit a stretch there. He got injured early in the first half against Indianapolis and then missed the rest of that game and the next three. So there's four games. Take away, you know, another, what, 6 to 8 touchdown passes, 5 to 8 touchdown passes there. And then the other thing is, as I said, he doesn't have big play receivers. He doesn't have touchdown making receivers. But when it comes to 18 play, 20 play drives, he's the king. He is the king of the long touchdown drive. The 18, 20 play touchdown drives. And that's, I guarantee you, that's the thing, if I may steal from Anthony Smith, I guarantee you that's the thing that has to worry, is worrying Bill Belichick.
Mm-hmm.
Because time is points, minutes are points. And the fewer minutes that Tom Brady is on the field, the fewer points the Patriots are going to score. I love the way the Jaguars match up in that way. I don't like the way the Jaguars match up on the other side of the ball. I think that's where the Jaguars have a real problem, and we saw that this past Saturday night. Ben Roethlisberger against a Jaguars defense that was dropping seven guys into coverage on almost every down.
Mm-hmm.
Because they were getting so much pressure with four, was still able to throw for 337 yards. 337 yards against a seven-man pass defense. Well, what do you think Brady's going to do, you know? That's where the Jaguars' real problem is. That's why it's more important than ever that they have these 18, 20-play drives. In a perfect world, the Jaguars would take 20 plays to score, recover an onside kick, and then take 20 more.
Right. Right. I have to admit that I've been very impressed, as you suggested, with Garrard's development, and that it has come rapidly. And certainly he seems to have the kind of team built around him that will help him not have to do what he can't do. And
I don't
in
know,
that regard,
I don't know, John. I don't know what he can't do. I mean, that's the popular theme with this guy. I'm sorry for interrupting you. But
no, that's right.
He's still carrying this game manager. Tell me what he can't do. Now, he's had one postseason start, and he played very poorly. This is another ball game. This is another level.
Right.
But in the regular season, he was one of two quarterbacks in the league this year that did not have a bad game, and you know who the other one is.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me what he can't do. He threw a beautiful deep ball. He threw accurately. He threw the intermediate routes. He threw the wheel routes, the screens, the swing passes. He rushed for yardage. He ran the offense. He did long drives. He did short drives. I don't see anything he can't do yet. There is this tag on him. Well, he's limited. He's a game manager. They had that tag. That tag was put on Ben Roethlisberger, too. Did you see that game Saturday night?
Mm-hmm.
Was that a game manager?
Yeah, well.
That was a gunslinger.
Yeah, he definitely was. Vic Ketchman, senior editor for Jaguars.com, joining us here inside the playbook. What's the fallout over Paul Spicer's comments?
That stuff means nothing. Zero. I'll tell you a little story.
Sure.
I covered the Steelers all through the 70s. I won four Super Bowls in 6 years.
Mm-hmm.
I don't ever remember seeing a bulletin board. I don't ever remember seeing a word highlighted on a wall anywhere in the locker room. And once asked Chuck Knoll, you're in this thing with the Raiders. It was a very, very violent series. It was it was just a fantastic rivalry of physical football on the field and words off the field. Now, you know, why don't you use any of that stuff as bulletin board material? And Chuck said, it's a distraction. If your players are thinking about words other players are saying, they're not thinking about the things they have to think about to play well on Saturday, or in that case Sunday, this case Saturday. I mean, really, what are these words going to do for you? I remember Chuck also saying, you know, all that pep talk crap lasts as long as the first time you get knocked on your butt.
Right.
And this is good for the fans. The fans love this because the fans can't play the physical game. All they can play is the psychological game. All they can play is the game of words.
Right.
But what the players are going to do Saturday night, that stuff is the first when they kick the ball off. It's done. It's over. It's all about the shoulders now. It's not about the mouth.
Absolutely. In fact, I think Vic that the key point in this ball game on Saturday night could very easily be the coin flip and then into the first quarter, simply because both teams have to want the ball first. They want to control tempo. The Patriots want to get out quick, force Jacksonville to come from behind. Jacksonville wants to hold on the ball, keep it away from New England.
There's two. Yeah, I'm with you. I think to maybe repeat you in a way.
Sure.
Repeat what you said. There are two issues in this game, in my opinion. Jacksonville's running game, mm-hmm. because they have to run the ball to dominate time of possession. They will not have any chance to win this game if Brady has time of possession. The longer he's on the field, the worse this is going to get. So they have to run the ball. They have to dominate time of possession. So we start with the running game. The Jaguars have to be able to run the ball. Now, let's not forget who the coach is for your team, Bill Belichick. And mm-hmm. let's not forget that in the 2001 and 2004 AFC title games against Pittsburgh, Pittsburgh had the number one and number two rushing games in the league, and they were stuffed. Bill Belichick is going, if that's all you can do is run the ball, he's going to take it away from you. I mean, guaranteed. And the Steelers did that Saturday night against the Jaguars. They put the ball in David Garrard's hands, and he was shaky. In his first postseason start, he did not look like the guy I had seen this regular season. All right? So I think we start with that. You start with the running game, and you start with the fact that Bill Belichick is going to, the first thing he's going to do in this game is whatever it takes to take the run away and put the game in Garrard's hands. That's number one.
Mm-hmm.
The number two issue in this game, as far as I'm concerned, is Tom Brady, obviously, because he is going against a pass defense that was not very good this year and is coming off a 337-yard performance against Ben Roethlisberger, who threw half those passes, off his ear. I mean, lying on the ground almost. I mean, he was under a constant barrage of pass rush. So the Jaguars are coming off a very poor performance against the pass. Well, Brady throws the ball pretty well, see, and that's a problem. I like how the Jaguars match up on one side of the ball, and I hate the way they match up on the other side of the ball. So like I said, they better be real good at running the ball, and they better stir in some onside kicks too, because I really don't see them stopping Tom Brady.
And yet, I thought that Sheen Mathis had a pretty good game last week. I mean, returned one for a touchdown and the like, and I would imagine he would see some time perhaps against Moss.
Yeah, well, Roethlisberger was his offensive line is horrible. It's just horrible. They're going to rebuild that whole thing. Have to rebuild it. And he was sacked 6 times. He was probably hurried 15 more times. A couple of those interceptions were, there was a definite element of desperation and I think an element of exasperation in them too. And he was able to compose himself in the second half and get into a better rhythm with the short balls, try to stay away from the rush, although they poured in on him. That's not going to happen Saturday night against Brady. The Patriots' offensive line is not going to get whipped by 4 guys. 5 guys aren't going to get whipped by 4, which is what happened in Pittsburgh. 4 was whipping 5. Mm-hmm. And that's not going to happen Saturday night. Brady's going to get the time he needs to throw. And that's where I go back to 337 yards passing. I mean, Roethlisberger was able to do it standing on his head. Brady will be standing on his feet.
Yeah, maybe. I think we're still kind of uncertain as to what kind of real protection he'll have. Although I thought that Ryan O'Callaghan and some others did a fairly representative job last time out. But it's always a bit of a crapshoot. What's that?
Let's see. I'm going to look and see how many times Brady's been sacked. 21 times. Mm-hmm. Roethlisberger has been sacked 53.
A little difference. Yeah, a little difference. Overall, coming into this game, did anybody have the feeling that this was going to be an inevitability, that they would end up coming to New England?
No. That game last week, you know, that was just a beautiful postseason football game. The Steelers played wonderful football. The Jaguars came back, had to come back to win. No, I never sensed inevitability. I think the Jaguars, in a little bit of a way, are destiny's darlings. They've got that Cinderella thing going here. I really think that the analysis of this game is real, real simple. If the Patriots stop the Jaguars' run, it's a blowout. If the Jaguars run the ball, they're in the game. I think this one is really simple. I think the Patriots obviously have greater pressure on them than the Jaguars. This perfect season stuff is, you know, can become a choke chain of sorts. But when have the Patriots not risen to the occasion? When have they not, stood in the face of pressure? I'm not going to tell you that the New England Patriots are a great football team. I'm just going to tell you that they got maybe the best quarterback who's ever lived. That's the difference. Someone asked me, what's the Patriots' greatest weakness? And I said, they don't have two Tom Brady's. You get this guy out of the game, game over.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, let's not be silly here. Let's not think that the New England Patriots have a magic wand. Bill Belichick was 5-13 when he made Tom Brady the starting quarterback. Check the record after that.
Right. It's very true. Quick word, if I could, then, about Fred Taylor getting added to the Pro Bowl, which I think is obviously a long-deserved honor for him. And fact is that he is the only Pro Bowl representative for this team, and might Fred and his teammates use that as a bit of a disrespect card coming in?
No, I don't know. Patriots fans really get off on this psychological warfare, and it just doesn't
believe
exist.
Me. Listen, let me tell you, we're well versed in all of this. We're well versed in all of it.
You know, first of all, let's go back to Anthony Smith. All right,
okay.
Before we get the opinion that Anthony Smith did in the Steelers with bulletin board material. Go back a few weeks before the Steelers played in New England. Go back to when they played against the Jets. You'll see that on the first play of the game, the Jets did one of those flea flicker things. And Anthony Smith is running forward as the ball is being thrown behind him for a touchdown. All right?
Mm-hmm.
So long before he bid on the play fake against the Patriots, he bid on the play fake against the Jets. He bid on the play fake against the Jaguars, and the Jaguars in week 15... and the Jaguars threw a long touchdown pass to Dennis Northcutt. It's what Anthony Smith does. So before we decide that it was Anthony Smith's ridiculous guarantee that won the game for the Patriots, we might want to take a look at Anthony Smith's track record as a player. All right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is really starting to get kind of nuts, to the point that I've become bulletin board material for an asterisk. Oh, please, do more of it, because if the Jaguars win the game, I'm going to sell T-shirts with an asterisk on them. And this whole thing is nuts. The Patriots have a fantastic football team, a fantastic coach, and maybe the best damn quarterback who's ever lived. They are, what, 12.5-point favorites? They should be. This is a major uphill battle for the Jaguars, but bulletin board material is going to have nothing to do with it.
And how does Fred Taylor feel about his Pro Bowl inclusion? Obvious, I would guess, on that answer.
He wanted it for years and years because it validates his great career. Although mm-hmm. I told him, I said, Fred, you should want to not make the Pro Bowl. Then you'd have a real identity. the best player to never make the Pro Bowl. You know,
I bet he didn't like that.
He thought about it. He says, "You know, you're right." He liked it. but you know, no, it's crazy how these things happen. I mean, you know, what's what was Phil Mickelson's tag for a long? Tom Kite in golf, mm-hmm. best player never to win a major, until he
right.
broke through at the U.S. Open. That's how you can become known. You gain fame, or at least fame or infamy that way. Fred Taylor is one. I think his image, his identity should be that of maybe the best big play, long run running back in history. I mean, this guy he's right with Barry Sanders. He's got a litany of long runs like no one I've ever covered. If he had played on a championship football team through all these years, he'd be on the tip of everybody's tongue. But, you know, he played in Jacksonville, and he played mostly for non-playoff teams. And now he's getting his 15 minutes of fame. He's had a great season. He's a great guy. And he's going to be the guy everyone wants to interview in Honolulu, and I'm happy as hell for him.
Good stuff. Vic Ketchman again, senior editor for Jaguars.com. Vic, thank you for a few minutes. We'll look forward to visiting with you on Saturday night.
Thanks, John.
Appreciate it. Again, Vic Ketchman, who is the longtime writer in the National Football League, covering not only the Jaguars, but as you heard him say, spent several years covering the Pittsburgh Steelers and some very good Super Bowl dominant teams in Pittsburgh over the years. And he's now covering the Jaguars for their team website, and some good insight there. Just to give you a bit of an idea, just the flavor, just how it is they're coming through with things from the other side of the field. You need a different perspective around here. That's one of the things we try to do, obviously, here inside the playbook every week for you, if not every show, is to give you the other side, to give you a feel for what the other guys, the other teams, the other players, what they're thinking and how they're approaching New England and the Patriots, and especially in this, what has been an unbelievable record-setting year. It doesn't come as a surprise that a lot of teams look at this as a huge challenge, and he's absolutely right where that's concerned. All right, let's get back to the interviews. A couple of more to get to for you today. Again, webradio@patriots.com is the email address. If you've got some comments coming up on the game, if you want to predict the score, you can do that as well. In the meantime, let's let you listen in to Ty Warren, Patriots defensive tackle, defensive end, defensive lineman, whichever spot you want to line him up in. That's what he does in the down three or the down four for the Patriots. And Warren had a chance to visit with media members here at Gillette Stadium.
What's going on?
Did signing your contract extension this year, that relax you a little bit, help you out? It's kind of year you've had.
I don't know about relax. I always concentrate on football. That was just another aspect of, you know, this business.
Personally, how do you think your season this season stacked up against last season?
Well, I think numbers-wise, it didn't, somebody said it didn't, you know, add up to last season's stats, if you want to look at stats, but as far as the player, I'm still the same player as I was last year. I feel like I improved in, you know, my pass rush a lot more. You know, even though the sacks weren't there, the hits on the quarterbacks was a lot more than it was last year. You know, if you want to look at that. You know, last year I had 117 tackles, I think. This year I had 83. You know, I think with the combination of Vrabel, myself, and Vince, to the left, I think, you know, I didn't see as much action as I seen last year. Maybe that contributed to the amount of tackles. But, you know, not justifying anything, I think there's no difference in the player here. You know, I'm still same old Ty.
About the challenges the defense will face, especially, you know, guys up front going up against that size of team, and particularly that size of backfield where it seems like the quarterback, the fullback, the running backs are all big guys.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, it's going to be a physical game. We all know that. We know what Jacksonville brings to the table. You know, number two in the league in rushing and number one in the AFC, and, you know, that combination of backs they have, I think, They have no weakness, really. I mean, they block well and blitz pick up. They run well. They both can be elusive. They both are home run backs. If you let them get to the line, they can't go the distance. And, you know, the offensive line, they play physical too, you know. And Gerard, the quarterback, he's really, you know, really the head of that whole operation, I think. But, you know, with help from the running backs.
Richard said yesterday, Seymour, that he thought he was getting closer and closer to 100%. What difference does that make?
Well, you know, at this point of the season, I don't think, you know, anybody is 100% or ever get to 100%. I don't know how he feels particularly. I think, you know, however you feel, he expressed that yesterday. But, you know, at this point of the season, it's kind of just you're trying to grind through, you know, and trying to prevent or enhance however you're feeling, you know, at that particular time.
Healthy Seymour offer, maybe that if he was less so couldn't do.
Seymour, just he's a impactful player regardless. You know, I'm not in his body, so you know, I really can't tell you how he feel when he's out there on the field. But I know, you know, point blank period, you know, he can be an impactful player and is one.
Ellis was talking yesterday a little bit about how there were times the team wasn't as maybe tough or as physical as it should be. Did you sense that at times, and maybe particularly in the Giants game, were there moments where you know, you need to crank it up a little bit now?
Well, I don't, you know, just speaking from the front, you know, I don't think it was ever a time in the season where we wasn't physical. I think at times during the season, we might have been out of place, you know, somewhere in the front seven, and that might have led to guys getting yards and things like that. As far as being physical, I think that is our game. And because of the type of defense we run, I think teams tend to try to block our techniques because we're really not going nowhere. So they try to get you out of place and, you know, at your comfort zone, which is, you know, jacking a guy up and two-gapping, you know, which, you know, sounds pretty bland. But if we can get a guy to move to the side a couple steps or get him to shoot a gap or anything like that, then you get guys out of place, and then you get big plays.
You know, Ty, the guys who have been the big physical type backs, the McGahees, you know, Brandon Jacob, those are the guys that seem to have kind of found a little bit of a weakness there. Do you think that it's harder to get that type of back down on the ground as opposed to the guy who likes to shimmy and shake a little bit?
No, it's not a problem to get those guys to the ground, I think. You know, it's... You know, I mean, you might call it a weakness, but I think it's probably just a flaw on that particular play where, you know, the play wasn't executed the way it needed to be executed. I think if everybody's where they need to be, everybody's playing the technique they need to play, then we're in good shape. If not, then we're not.
How do you respond when opponents start trash talking to you this time of year?
Well, you know, the game, as you know, and as many people have said, is played between the white lines. And, you know, as far as myself, I mean, I'm not going to sit up here and do a lot of tongue wrestling with a guy halfway across the country. You know, only thing I have control over is going out there and playing the best I can and just being accountable from that standpoint, and everything else will take care of itself. On the field.
No, when they trash talk on the field.
Oh, on the field?
Yeah.
Oh, excuse me.
I've seen a lot of that over the Giants talking.
Yeah, I mean, you know, emotions are flying high. You know, not to, you know, recap over the whole Giant game, but, you know, that was a game that, you know, they were looking to win. They were, you know, their pride was on the line. They wasn't looking to lay down. They was looking to come into that game and play the best game they could. And, you know, emotions, some people express their emotions in different ways, you know. And, and that was the case in the Giants game, I think, with some of those guys, not all of them.
Playing with guys like Vince and Richard up front at their level, how much do you guys push each other and sort of feed off each other to rise to a new level playing with the other guys up front?
I mean, you know, everybody's pushed, you know, in a separate way. We all compete as defensive linemen, you know, from Richard to me to Vince to Jarvis. Whoever's out there, so you know, you always look to go out there and put on your best performance. And we, you know, sometimes have our own little bets and things like that within the group, you know, that kind of gets us going. So, it's always a competitive deal, but at the same time, it's always fun and important to be having fun when you're out there playing.
You talked about flaws, but find those are getting smaller. Are you guys reducing those as the season?
Well, I think that's the benefit of the bye week. You know, you get to look back on all the plays that may have hurt you, or you know, the plays that may have not been ran particularly well during the course of the season, and you get to correct those things because in the playoffs, you know, teams will, you know, try to capitalize on those things and, you know, try to dissect any little thing that you've done wrong over the course of the season and try to use that against you or build plays to do that same thing, maybe in a different look, you know. So, you know, that's the benefit of the bye week and things like that, that we were able to work on those things and, you know, give ourselves a better chance to, you know, possibly win this week.
Ty Warren again on the podium earlier at Gillette Stadium with members of the Patriots media present as he gives his thoughts on preparing for the Jacksonville Jaguars. Don't know if you know this or not, but Jags are just one of four teams in which the Patriots own an undefeated home record. They are 4-0 all time against the Jaguars at Gillette Stadium. Patriots are also, by the way, the other three teams they are undefeated at home against in the NFL: Baltimore 2-0, Chicago 3-0, and Houston 1-0. So Jacksonville's just one of four teams that has come in and has never beaten the Patriots on their home field. Patriots, as we've already talked about today, have beaten the Jaguars twice previously in the playoffs, back in 96 and also a couple of years ago in 2005. And that makes Jacksonville now one of six teams against which the Patriots own multiple playoff wins. They own three playoff wins over Pittsburgh. They own two apiece over Indy, Miami, the Jets, and the Raiders. They also own two over the Jaguars. They'll try to make it three, of course, on Saturday night. So I thought just, you know, some little interesting little tidbits that come across here that you might not have known that we like to bring you up to date on, of course, right? Of course, the reason that you heard from Kyle Brady a little bit early in the program is because he has a tremendous connection with the Jaguars. He played for the Jaguars for eight seasons from 1999 to 2006. He caught more than 2,500 yards in receiving yards for Jacksonville. And by the way, that is still third on Jacksonville's career receiving yards list. Let me look at his number here. 241 passes for those 2,500 yards, and those 241 receptions are fourth overall in Jaguars history. So he has quite a bit of history, obviously, with Jacksonville, and I'm sure that is something that the Patriots are leaning on quite heavily this week, as they do from time to time. So that's really the biggest connection between the two sides this week. I don't know. I guess I'm a little bit, it's a good word for it here. I don't want to say uncertain. I do have a relatively good feeling about the game going in on Saturday. I did think that about this time a week ago when we were beginning to kind of broach the subject and think that Jacksonville might be one of the opponents, that Jacksonville would be the most difficult matchup of the ones that were available to the Patriots in this particular instance. It could have been Tennessee. It could have been Pittsburgh. I personally thought that Pittsburgh might squeeze in. Obviously, that game certainly came close to coming that way, but Jacksonville got it done in the end, and so credit certainly goes to where the Jaguars are concerned. But of those three teams, that there was no doubt in my mind that Jacksonville was going to be the most difficult matchup of the three. And I think Vic Ketchman, again, from Jaguars.com, put it best. This game really kind of comes down to a very simple premise. Which team's going to kind of control the ball? Can the Jaguars run against the Patriots? Can the Patriots have the ball long enough in order to score enough? And the first quarter is just going to be huge. It's just going to be key. Now, yes, turnovers are the great equalizer, especially in the playoffs, as we talked about in the opening hour of the program today with Russell Baxter. You know, it could be 21-3 or 21-7 or what have you, and you're cruising along in the third quarter, and you know, maybe the Patriots are getting ready to knock on the door and blow the game open, and all of a sudden, boom, turnover. Maybe you throw a pick that gets returned the other way, or maybe you fumble the ball deep on your end of the field and you allow them a cheapie, and now they're back in it. A huge momentum swing is what you want to try to avoid if, of course, it goes against you. You got to avoid those in the playoffs. That's the only thing that can bring a team back from the abyss. That's the one thing the Patriots must avoid, and that's the one thing they need to try to force upon Jacksonville, is a momentum-changing event, whether it comes through defense, turnovers, special teams, big plays on offense. That's what you have to look for. We're going to wrap up today's program with Patriot head coach Bill Belichick from earlier today at Gillette Stadium. So, again, you can get the latest from the coach. Tomorrow's program, again, will be somewhat abbreviated only because we'll have Michael Felger with his normal Patriots Friday programming from 890 ESPN in Boston. He's moving his schedule up to tomorrow because the Patriots players aren't available on Friday, the normal day, because of the Saturday game. So they pushed everything back a day this week, and so he will be along just shortly, I believe, after 2 p.m. tomorrow. We'll be here with you for a little bit of the program tomorrow, an abbreviated version, if you will, of the playbook, and then Mike will take over with some of his Patriots Friday interviews for you during this time slot tomorrow. All right, wrapping up today's program, here's Patriots head coach Bill Belichick.
Not too much new at this end, or plugging along situation stuff, getting ready for team does a lot of things well, so fire away.
The four wide receivers rotation, now you've acquired them at different times and they have different talents. Is there something in common in the four that made you want to have them on this team?
Something in common on the four of them. Receivers' job is to get open and catch the ball. So if they fall into that category, then I think any quarterback or any offense could help any offensive team in that way, no matter what their skills are, whether they're tall, short, fast, quick, whatever. So that's the bottom line. Then how they fit in, then that's. They're different.
Bill, did you have to work to refocus your players at all after the 16-0 regular season, or does that seem like a pretty distant memory right now?
We treated it one week at a time all year. So this week it's Jacksonville. Tried to approach every week the same. Each week has its own unique challenges, and it's definitely true this week. So. I think any of those other games really had a whole lot of bearing on this one.
How did Lawson Walker stack up as blockers compared to some of the other receivers you've had here? We saw Wes.
Good.
Not down the goal line, is that?
Good. Yeah, all the way through the year. I think that's kind of better than what it's been, for the most part. I'm not talking about a specific play, but just in general. Yeah, they've done a good job.
What kind of challenge does their running game present for you, maybe relative to some
challenge? This is the best running game in the league. Get two great backs, and they can hit the home run. They've got long runs. I think they've got probably the most long runs in the league. They can pick up a tough yard on third down or short yardage, goal line, those kind of situations. So they're very good on blitz pickup. I know you're asking about the running game, but as it relates to the backs, they do a good job there. And they have a big physical offensive line. He has a lot of different personnel combinations, two tight ends, three tight ends. You got a big fullback in Jones. So they do it a lot of different ways, and they're good at it. They run the ball on all three downs. They have good balance, and they stay out of long yardage situations, which when you pick up those third downs, then you can go back and run it again, and that's what they do, quarterback runs. So they do it a lot of different ways.
Is it rare to have all of their backfield be such big physical people, quarterback?
Well, their whole team's like that. So they draft them that way, and that's what their team is. They're a big physical team. I think they're big at every position. On really receivers, they're big. Quarterback's big. Backs are big. Line's big. Corners are big. Defensive line's big. They're all big. Henderson, you know, Stroud, but Grady Jackson. You got to find them much bigger than them either. So, I mean, you can go that way right across the board. They're big at every spot. And even the players that, like Leftwich, I mean, he was big. You know, replaced him by another big guy. So, I think that's Kyle Brady was big. You know, I mean, they've had big players there, and those players have moved on or whatever, and whatever their circumstances were, and the next wave that comes in, they're big too. So,
you mentioned the size of their receivers. So does that present any kind of a different challenge in covering them, or is it just
sure? Yeah, every receiver has his own unique talents and his own way of getting open. And some guys do it with size, some with speed, some with quickness, some with technique, some with hands. You know, they make a lot of their catches that way. You know, so each guy has his own. You know, they're a big receiving group. Other than Northcutt, he's not the biggest guy, but he's fast, he's quick, and you know he has his set of skills, and he's very good too in the slot and as a returner and as a deep ball player. So deep ball threat. So they have a nice combination of players, the skills, but they have, you know, Wilford, Reggie Williams, those guys have really good hands. You know, they catch everything. They're big targets. Same thing with Lewis. He's a tight end, but he's kind of like a big receiver. He's big, he's fast, real athletic. So they've got a good group to throw to.
So how has the linebacker position evolved in what you asked when you were coaching in New York to what you ask of those guys now?
I don't think it's dramatically different. In fact, to some of our linebackers' chagrin, I bring out those giant tapes and show them what we were doing back then and how we did it and let them take a look at that. So, there's a lot of carryover. Technique-wise, the plays, the skill sets, I don't think it's changed dramatically. I think there's subtle changes, but I think basically there's a lot of similarities.
How often do you bring the tapes up?
More often than they would like. You know, whenever it's appropriate or whenever we, you know, go over something that, you know, maybe you can show a good example on it from, you know, somebody else doing it. But, you know, for whatever reason, we just haven't had the situation come up, or maybe we go back and remind them about something that, you know, we're not doing well. I go back and look at it and kind of refreshes me as to how we maybe coached it or maybe techniqued it a little bit differently for certain things. So, you know, every once in a while.
Well, did you feel your club was making strides against the run as the regular season progressed?
I think each week's its own, every game's its own unique entity. So whether you can play well against one team, that doesn't necessarily mean you can play well against another team. So I don't think that's, you got to do it every week, start all over again, break down how the new team's doing it, how your new opponent's doing it, how you're going to defend it, how you got to play it, who they're, what threats they have, how they do it, how to handle the different blocking schemes, the different personnel guys that are blocking you. So it's, to me, it's different every week. And it doesn't really make any difference what happened last week. It's, we're not playing them. We've got a new team, new challenge. And they're good. So it's a big challenge.
It seemed like you put a lot of emphasis here on playing the full 60 minutes, even when you were way ahead. Did the way the Indy game ended last year?
Believe it or not, we always try to play 60 minutes.
Game ended last year, does that have anything to do with kind of a renewed emphasis on it?
Why? I mean, honestly, do you think we would ever tell our team, with just 50 this week, fellas? That's all we need. Just 45, and then we'll take a quarter off. I mean, we always try to play 60 minutes. I know it doesn't look like it out there, but we always try to play 60 minutes or more, whatever it takes. But it's every play, every situation, being prepared for everything, being ready to go all the way, however long it takes to do whatever it takes. So there's been no change in that emphasis since I can't remember when. But, I mean, we talked about that in 2000 and every year since then, in every game. So, I mean, believe me, we've never said, Let's just give him a good half this week, fellas. That's, you know, we don't do that. I don't think anybody else does either.
When you play a big physical team with a powerful running game, is it a matter ultimately of meeting force with force to stop that?
Well, it's being able to do your job. You know, it's, look, there's somebody, everybody's going to get blocked. You know, it's not like they or any other team runs plays where they say, well, we're not going to block Wilfork, or we're not going to block Seau, or, you know, we're not going to block Vrabel. I mean, everybody gets blocked by somebody. It's just a question of how they scheme it. How they set it up, and so you're going to have to defeat a block, and then you're going to have to tackle the guy with the ball, whoever that happens to be. So, you know, it comes down to playing with good technique, playing with good leverage, doing a good job of tackling, everybody fitting in the right spot in their gaps, playing good team run defense. That's what the running game is. That's what it always will be. Six guys could do a good job. One guy doesn't. That's the gap the runner hits. They got to play. So it doesn't really make any difference what the other five or six guys or seven, however many it is, are involved in the play. It's team defense. That's how you stop the running game. We can't stop it with one guy. And so, in the end, you got to defeat a block. You got to tackle the runner. There's no other way around it. You know, you might scheme it up every once in a while to get somebody free on a stunt or something, but that's not going to do it for you in the long run.
Chris, for what you asked him to, I guess he gets a little bit lonesome out there. Chris Hansen, is he performing, you know, up to what you expect out of him when he taught you?
Yeah, I think Chris had a good year. Yeah, I think he's done a good job for us. He's done what we've asked him to do, and, you know, like everybody else, not perfect, but it's been good. It's probably been a little better than what we've had here recently. So, you know, he's a good athlete. He's consistent. He's got good hands. Done a good job holding with Steve. And, you know, I think he's done a good job in situational punting. So he's given us some good plays, and he's been overall consistent during the course of the year.
Coach, you talked about Junior's enthusiasm for the game. Can you give us a
specific
moment?
Every day, every practice. Yeah, he's here early, stays late. Got a lot of energy out on the field. Very vocal, communicating guy. Every time we go in the huddle, he's got an energy and a presence about him. It's pretty much nonstop. You know, he does. I think he's obviously one of the most respected players in the league, certainly on this team, and. He's got a good message, and people listen to him, as they should. He's got a lot of experience, and comes from the heart. So,
Bill, you're saying how you look at every game as being a single inning, right? And clearly, you've all done a very good job here, being able to just slow the whole thing down, focus on one game every week. Did that develop in you? Like, did you have to learn that? Find that early on?
It's always the way it's been. It's the way I was brought up. It's the way I tried to play and approach it, and that's the way I tried to coach it. So, you know, it's hard enough for me to think about one thing at a time and start trying to, you know, put two or three together. I can't handle it. I don't know if anybody else can or not, but I can't, so I don't even try to.
You mentioned earlier that Jacksonville was sort of built according to a philosophy where they draft for size and physicality. How important is it to stay with a philosophy like that in all of your drafting and acquisition, etc.?
I think it's very important to stay with a philosophy. I think that's where you can get consistency on your team, and you know what you're looking for. You try to look until you find something that works. I'm not saying you're not always trying to upgrade or improve it, but it helps develop your consistency. So when one player goes out and another player comes in, you basically can continue to function, and, you know, also your scheme. You know, it's hard when you got one kind of player playing, whatever, it doesn't matter what position it is, and then the opposite player, the other tackle, the other corner, the other outside linebacker, the other defensive tackle, he's got a totally different style of play, and then you're trying to play the same defense, and you know, one guy's playing it one way, another guy's playing it another way according to his skill set and his size and his, you know, his athleticism. So, I mean, no two players are the same. I'm not. I understand that too. But you know, you get one guy who plays it one way, another guy who plays it another way. It's hard to develop consistency within your unit when you have that situation. I think Jacksonville's done a real good job, and think their record reflects it over the years of building consistency on their roster. They have the same coach now, you know, and the same, even though they've changed coordinators, we've gone through that here too, we've changed coordinators, but I think there's still a lot of elements of their system that carry over, and again, I think that's reflected in their record and their play. So I think it has a lot to do with it.
Bill, when I watched the Nick Saban coach, he used to spend a lot of time.
not a lot of time. He was the defensive backs coach.
No, when he was the head coach.
That's what I'm talking about. Yeah. I mean, you don't have to tell me. He was a DB coach.
Do you spend a lot more time with the linebackers, and if so, why?
It depends. I have the last couple of years, but that's been circumstantial. There was years when I spent time with the quarterbacks and the offensive side of the ball, secondary. So it varies. It's not necessarily the same every year.
I know every team is different. Pittsburgh plays a 3-4. Was it good to see Jacksonville match up against Pittsburgh as opposed to maybe someone who would play us?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I think you can. For us, we could see a lot more from the Pittsburgh game than some other teams they play. But, you know, Pittsburgh plays it a little bit differently than we do. But still, that being said, there are certainly some things that we could that we can learn from that game. The 4-3 over and under teams, they attack a little bit differently, I think, than the 3-4 teams. I mean, you have to. It's not anything that you have to. The players are placed differently. So we get a lot better, look at somebody who kind of plays a defensive front or style that's similar to ours, even though it's different. But at least you can, maybe part of the play looks the way we'd say it, part of it doesn't. But at least you can kind of picture that. And plus, especially offensively, we've played this defense a couple times before. We've played the offensive players, but the scheme's a little bit different with the change of coordinators. So, but yeah, that definitely helps. Okay. Thank you.